Hey everybody, Ray Lucchese here with
Matt Lieb.
Welcome to the next episode of Graybeards on Storage podcast, a show where we get graybeard storage bloggers to talk with system vendors and other experts to discuss upcoming products, technologies, and trends affecting the data center today. This Graybeards on Storage episode is recorded February 12th, 2021. We have this here today, Tong Shang, co-founder and chief scientist at ScaleFlux. So Tong, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what ScaleFlux is up to with their new computational storage?
Yes. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's good. It's really great to have this opportunity to talk about this computational storage. The ScaleFlux was really kind of founded at the end of the 2014. With the mission of kind of exploring the commercially viable path to move the very simple idea of computational storage into the real world. So actually, we coined the term of computational storage. And today, we are very happy to see the computational storage has very successfully gained kind of a tremendous momentum in the industry over the years. And now we are over the past years, we have evolved, become today the only company that has shipped thousands of computational storage drives to the data centers worldwide.
Ah, we were at we had a Flash Memory Summit wrap up here last fall, actually, and Jim Handy was talking about the nascent success of computational storage. Which, you know, you guys been around, like you said, since 2014. I mean, it's when you started. Obviously, you didn't have a product then, but it's been a long haul to get to this point. What is going on that's driving some of the adoption of computational storage?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So actually, we can just look back a little bit even earlier that in terms of computational storage, actually, loosely speaking, we can say any data storage device built on any storage technology, for example, either flash memory or magnetic recording or even DRAM, so can carry out kind of any data processing tasks beyond its core data storage duty can be defined or can be called as a computational storage drive. So actually, this simple idea of empowering data storage devices with additional computing capability is certainly not new. Actually, we didn't invent this kind of idea. So this idea can really trace back to more than 20, I think at least more than 20 years ago.
Oh God, when I was at Storage Technology Corporation, we were adding, sort specific commands to the storage solution that we had. So that we could provide and compression and decompression kinds of things for backups and stuff like that. But it was a fairly niche market, and there was only a couple of vendors that we were focused on to provide that functionality. Nowadays, it's much more generic, I would say. It's much more available to just about anybody who wants to use it, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's really, I think now is the right timing, because back then, because of the steady and the healthy CMOS Moore's law, CMOS technology scaling in the good old days, really not surprisingly, the mainstream industry chose not to adopt this idea. But more recently, as you mentioned, that this idea, this very simple idea, received a really kind of a resurgence of interest. We believe really driven by two trends. One is as the CMOS technology scaling slows down, there's a growing consensus in the industry that is domain-specific or heterogeneous computing must play an increasingly important role to complement with the host CPU to push forward. And the second, that the significant progress of solid-state data storage to really push the system bottleneck from the data storage to computing. So then naturally, the concept of computational storage very nicely match those two grand trends. So So that is really kind of a naturally, this idea was now is being picked up by the industry.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about, and Matt was there at our year-end podcast, was the rise of the ARM processor in the data center and out at these, you know, I'll call them external computing engine kind of thing. I mean, you know, computational storage is just one aspect, but you know, DPUs are another. Smart NICs. There's a couple of products out there that are like storage processors sitting out on the network and stuff like that. It's all kind of evolving, I guess, like you say, because the Moore's law is starting to slow down, and the computer is starting to become the bottleneck again. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think over the next few years, we will see a very exciting kind of development across all over the board, like a smart NIC, DPU, and a computational storage drive. We see that as really kind of complementary to each other to really form a very solid heterogeneous computing fabrics to complement with the CPU and the GPU. And each one of those, like a computational storage drive, DPU, and a smart NIC, they have their own unique position. And they have their own like a very well-suited applications domain and computation functions to push toward that. So I think that really kind of will complementary come together to really help the host CPU to the full extent.
Mm-hmm. A lot of these devices have specific hardware circuitry to offload, you know, time-sensitive tasks and that sort of stuff. Does computational storage have that as well, or is it more just an ARM processor that you can run, you know, different workloads on if you want?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is a very good question. So actually, that is also a question we have been asking ourselves over the years, like when we start the ScaleFlex to really explore this area. So now I think transparent compression and encryption, we believe, is a must for any commercially viable computational storage drive, because there's a pervasive usage of at-rest data storage. Pervasive use of at-rest data compression and the data encryption really can greatly benefit from the built-in customized hardware circuit inside the storage drive that can transparently carry out compression and encryption.
Yeah, Tong, didn't you know self-encrypting drives have been around for quite a while? I mean, even on the disks, not just the SSDs and stuff like that. So that sort of logic has been around, but you know, the compression, decompression kinds of things, that's a different animal, I'd say. But yeah, and maybe they're all doing the same sorts of logic kinds of things, but not. I don't know.
Yeah. So actually, compared with the encryption, the compression, to move the compression function into the storage drive is much, much more challenging from and also much more beneficial from two aspects. The first is that compared with the encryption, compression is very much unfriendly to CPU because the compression,
there's always been a ton of overhead.
Yes, because compression by nature, the data processing flow of compression has a lot of randomness. So this randomness will trigger a lot of a cache miss in CPU. So that is very bad from the CPU's performance perspective. So then compared with the encryption, so the compression will tend to consume much more CPU cycles. So as a result, it is much more beneficial to migrate compression off from the CPU and down to the storage drive on the I/O path. And another challenge for the compression is that because there's once we compress the data, the compressed data block size can is unpredictable. It can vary from one block to the other. So then for the computational storage drive, we have to implement a very efficient data remapping mechanism to handle the variable length compressed data block. So that also really makes things very, very challenging to move the compression, even though the concept of a compression is just is really not that fancy, right? It's not compared with AI or machine learning. It's really kind of very old.
Even encryption. I mean, encryption, it seems to me much more mathematically intensive task than compression ever was. But getting back to what you said, so you think that compression, you said it was more random from a cache perspective. You're talking the instruction cache or the data cache in the CPU or?
A data cache, yes, data cache.
The data cache.
Yes. Actually, today's modern CPU can execute the private key encryption much, much, at least one order of magnitude higher speed than executing compression.
No kidding. That's interesting. That's fair. It's like, you know, regular LZ compression or something. It's not anything that fancy, right? I mean, it's just normal compression kinds of algorithms, right?
Yeah. Yeah. For example, like a single core CPU can execute this AES encryption with a few gigabyte per second encryption throughput. But for compression, for example, like Zlib, Gzip, and LZ4, at most, like for GZIP, it only 10 to 50, 60 megabyte per second. For LZ4, it only about 300, 400 megabyte per second. So it's way, way lower than.
Yeah, order of magnitude, a couple orders of magnitude, depending on the algorithm. That's impressive.
Yes.
That's impressive.
So that is the reason why it is so beneficial to push the compression into the drive.
But you also have to add all the sophistication of the variable block size remap. And you know, Flash obviously does its own mapping, remapping, Flash translation stuff all along. But you got to put on top of this. Now you've got variable length blocks that you're playing with that have to be somehow stacked all across all this Flash and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That is also makes things so complicated and. Actually, at Scale Flux, we are able to really converge the functionality of a traditional Flash translation layer with the variable length block management, and also make everything in line along this I/O path. So then that when we do the compression and the decompression, we do not introduce any noticeable amount of extra latency on the I/O path.
Well, I mean, the other thing with compression, you know, when we were doing it at the storage controller or level, you know, it actually helped the performance because we were moving less data around, right? You were writing less data and reading less data from the back end and stuff. But when you're doing it at the drive, you're still effectively sending all that data out the front end, right? What's your interface to the drive, NVMe or?
Yes, we are PCIe Gen 4, and then down the road we migrate into PCIe Gen 5. So really, we really enjoy this kind of a continuous progress on this PCIe bandwidth. So it's really provide a very wide this kind of front end bandwidth for us to move this compression down, push that into the drive, and then even. Today our product use a TLC flash memory, and then we will also very, very soon we will release the QLC based flash memory. So then we have very clearly observed that the benefit of using compression to improve the storage drive performance on both TLC and the QLC, and even more noticeably on QLC flash.
Interesting. Well, I mean, the challenge with QLC flash is they want to write in big stripes and, you know, and that sort of thing. And with compression, I guess you could pack more of that stuff in there to try to get the stripe wider. And so when you claim, and I have no idea what capacity your current drives are at, is that at raw capacity or as compressed capacity or how does that work?
Oh, yes. like for our current product, like we start from like a raw capacity is a 4 terabyte or raw capacity is 8 terabyte. And then once the user have other our drive, then the user can format our drive with, like, for example, like for the drive with a 4 terabyte raw capacity, then the user can format the drive as an 8 terabyte drive or 16 terabyte drive. And then to enjoy the benefit of really kind of using compression to expand, to amplify the usable logic storage capacity.
Yeah. It's almost like virtual storage versus real storage and physical storage and that sort of stuff.
Yes, yeah. More like a SIM provisioning. Like
right. Actually, SIM provisioning is the other kind of word
that
applies. So where are you guys finding success? I mean, is this something like that you would see in enterprise data centers, or is it more in, you know, a public cloud environment, or where?
Yes, in data center and the cloud, and mainly like for our current product, we see the early adopters mainly are the relational database users, like MySQL, MariaDB, Oracle, those kind of relational database customers there, because they have to handle a huge amount of data, and at the same time, the relational database is very latency sensitive. So historically or traditionally, people never turn on the compression, because when they do the compression, they have to move the data back and forth between like a CPU or even some kind of accelerator to do the compression, decompression. That will introduce extra latency penalty. So that will degrade their relational database performance. So even though the data, majority of the data in relational database, they are highly compressible. People never compress the data, almost never compress the data. But once we use once they see our computational storage drive with built-in transparent inline compression, then they can enjoy that lower storage cost and without any penalty on the performance, because we just do the compression, decompression transparently inline. And even sometimes they even see the performance improvement. They see benefit on the performance in addition to the much lower storage cost.
Are you seeing the same level of compression algorithm apply to, let's just say, databases to as opposed to far less compressible type data, like video and audio and PDFs and that kind of thing?
Oh, no. We see a very wide range of data compressibility. And for the video and the image and audio, certainly they are not compressible, because they are already being compressed by the video compression algorithm, by the audio compression. So then that kind of scenario is really not applicable to us. Like, but for on the other hand, for the relational, like for database data set, those data are very highly compressible. Like, actually, we have seen from our customers, like reported to us, like they have even seen over 5-to-1 compression ratio on their production data.
So your compression algorithm is based on white space?
Oh, our compression algorithm is fundamentally the same as LZ, like just like in the gzip compression algorithm.
Yeah, so it's not just white space, it's also, you know, changing the redundancy levels or the number of times a particular character string is used or characters are used. So gzip is fairly fairly compute intensive, but it does do a decent job of compressing and stuff like that. In some cases we've seen where, you know, there's like a, you know, there's an inline version of the compression algorithm and there's an offline version of the compression algorithm, but you do everything inline, right? Yes.
Yeah, everything is inline. And also one thing that our customers really like it is that they do not need to change anything on their software stack.
Transparent,
like,
right?
Yeah, everything is transparent. They do not need to change any single line of code in the application. They do not need to change any single line of code in their like a file system or on their IO stack. So then we they just plug in and then just install our driver and then like everything just works.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we talked about compression, we talked about encryption. Are there other functionality that's being done outboard like this?
Then the compression encryption is a, like a foundation. And because that is also like transparent, it's a, without any like, demand to change on the upper level application. But also like we have also explored another direction is that we purposely push down some like a data filtering kernel from the data analytics engine into the drive. So then that inside the drive, we can pre-process or like you can consider as a filter the data on behalf of the host CPU. So then the host CPU will only need to handle the already filtered data. So actually basically like for any data analytics pipeline, there's two steps. The first step is to prepare the data, like to select those real useful data. And then second step is to do the real data analytics. But more than often, the first stage, like the data preparation stage or data filtering stage, tend to consume even more CPU cycles than the second step.
Yeah, I would imagine because you got to bring all the data in, you got to check to see if it's the right data. Yes. And then effectively, half of that might not even be the right data. So you're throwing all the stuff away. And that way, you don't have to actually sync across the network. So this sort of thing would require changes to protocols, or is there some sort of standard system protocol that allows you to do these sorts of things, or is this all specific proprietary to Scaleflex?
Yeah, at this time, it is still kind of everything is customized, and today is being led by Intel and AWS. The NVMe committee is under the development of the kind of to extend the NVMe standard to support the computational storage. So then they will standardize the interface. So then like in the future, then we can and like everyone can use a standardized interface to push down the computation. But today, like before we have a kind of a NVMe based standard, then everything will just kind of customized. So actually we have developed a solution with Alibaba Cloud and to do exactly the same, like for a database running on the Alibaba Cloud, they customize their engine and then in such a way that they are able to push down the data filtering kernel through a customized interface to our drive. Then inside our drive, we will do the pre-processing. We will filter the data and then only send the data that can pass this filtering stage and back to the CPU.
So it's almost, I was thinking that you could do some sort of thing with containers where you'd send the container and have it run out there on the drive. But this is more specific to the filtering kernel kinds of capabilities. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the other question is there like an ARM processor sitting on the drive that's available for these sorts of services or?
Yes, actually, that's a very good question. So actually, our current product is based on the FPGA. So we don't have like a built-in ARM core yet. But very soon, we will have our SoC chip will be available. So in our SoC chip, we will have ARM cores available there then to enhance the programmability. So then our future SoC chip will have both hardware compression, encryption, those kind of hardware engine, and plus multiple ARM cores that can handle those programmable like data filtering, data selection operations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You would think something like transcoding would also be something that would be useful to be done outboard. You know, if a video comes in and it's, I don't know, MP4 or something like that, or you want to go to, you know, higher resolution or lower resolution kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty computationally intensive as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. So actually, we can expand the concept of the transcoding, like not necessarily only for video. Like we can, in the drive, we can transcode any data format from data from one format to the other format. So inside the drive, without needing to bother CPU to handle those kind of data format conversion.
So what sort of other things besides video transcoding would that be? I mean, audio transcoding, I guess, would be the same thing, but...
Oh, and like, for example, today, like the industry is really heavily pushing toward what we call the in-memory data analytics, right? So, but for in-memory data analytics, but we need to analyze the data like from some like a storage, like suppose a file, a big file contains the data, then we want to do this kind of in-memory data analytics. But when data are stored on the hard disk drive or solid state drive, people use a format different from the format that people are doing for the in-memory data analytics. So then, like if we can build in the format conversion into the drive, so then like when the user want to do the data in-memory data analytics from on some data on the drive, then transparently on the fly, our drive will convert the data format or data syntax from the on-storage data format into the in-memory data format. So then the CPU can immediately start the data in-memory data analytics without doing any kind of a conversion.
Format translation. Yeah. I guess I'm not familiar with how that works out. I was trying to think of what might be that sort of thing, but it's not like you're changing the block size or anything like that. This is more than just that sort of work. You're actually changing the format of the fields and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's changing the format. For example, like if we have a big table data, like maybe the raw data are stored on the drive with the raw by raw, but for the in-memory data analytics, they might favor column by column like data. So then we can convert from raw by raw to column by column, because once the data are in the column by column format, then CPU can very nicely you apply this a single instruction, multiple data, like a vectorized processing. Yes. Yeah, so
yes.
That is the
no
kind
way.
Of a, yes.
No way. You can do row by row to column
yes.
by column.
This yes. is actually, that is the one direction we're very actively exploring.
Right. Well, you know, I always thought that, you know, quite frankly, I'm not a database expert, so all this is conjecture on my part, but, you know, row-based databases and column-based databases were completely different animals. To know that you could do the same work, the same data for both is kind of an impressive concept.
Yes. Yeah. We are very excited about all kinds of possibilities and opportunities enabled by moving compute into the storage drive. So, actually, I would believe that now we are still at scratching the surface. Like we're still much more they're waiting for us to discover.
So it seems to me that compression has always run sort of alongside, if not hand in hand, with deduplication. Is there any dedupe in your algorithm either?
Yes. Right now we don't have the support on the dedupe yet. But certainly that is on our to-do list. Like we will explore that how we can further integrate the dedupe functionality into the drive. And also because when people talk about dedupe, then the efficiency of the dedupe will improve once we dedupe data across multiple drives, right? The more data we have, then the higher chance we can dedupe. So then over there, we are we're exploring the possibility of like doing like a global flash management and integrate with dedupe function and also the dedupe is also need a lot of like hashing computation. So then all kinds of possibilities there to, yeah.
So, I mean, one of the challenges with, SSDs in general and is that, you know, if a power fluctuation happens or you lose power, there's a potential for data sitting in DRAM cache, if there is such a thing on your drive, to be lost. How do you deal with the power failure kinds of scenarios in a system that does this sort of thing?
Oh, yes. Actually, we treat the data reliability very seriously, because that is also like when people talk about the computational storage, people tend to emphasize too much on the computation. They at the same time, they might tend to ignore about the storage. But actually, at Scaleflux, we strongly believe that to qualify for a viable computational storage drive, you have to be first to be a good storage drive before we can talk about the computation aspect. So then we spec our storage drive at the exactly same level as any high-end enterprise grade solid state drive. So then actually we integrate like a capacitor based power loss protection mechanism, and we guarantee that whenever data reach our drive, then even when the power goes away, then we will guarantee that the data will never be lost.
That's very interesting. I mean, a lot of this stuff is something that you would find in the storage controller 2 decades ago. You know,
yes,
sitting there on the drive is very interesting, and you're doing all this with FPGA at this point. That's fairly interesting as well.
Yes. Actually, the reason we chose FPGA because, actually, to be honest, like at the very beginning, like when we started this company, we didn't have very clear a picture about the future either. So then we believe that this is a trend. But in order to really kind of explore this direction, then FPGA is certainly the best option, like for us to quickly prototype and then quickly engage with the potential customer and then quickly get the feedback. So over the years, we use FPGA to really kind of
quickly iterate,
explore
your
the path.
Yes.
Like
yeah. And FPGA has become much more flexible and functional as well, right? And much more sophisticated and much more logic can be jammed into one, right?
Yes, yes. And also we have the industry, the best team on designing the controller, and also like a very, very sophisticated ECC. Then we put everything into a middle range Xilinx FPGA. So actually many people even like didn't believe like we can do that, like to put everything into the middle range FPGA and plus computation on the FPGA. So that is really kind of surprised many people.
The challenge, of course, is that your team has to pretty much implement the logic that the customer requires, right? With the ARM processor, if it comes on board as quickly, you know, it can become a little bit, it's almost, you know, the customer can do all this stuff, or the developers of the customer line can do all this stuff themselves rather than having you guys have to re-implement this logic every time.
Yes. Yeah. So the our plan is that once our next generation SoC based computational storage drive will be available, then we will provide a set of environment and a platform then to enable the customer to conveniently utilize the ARM cores in our drive and also can seamlessly integrate with already built-in transparent compression and encryption functionalities, and then to really form a very kind of highly programmable and at the same time high performance computational storage drive development platform.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do you see like data centers coming in and buying, you know, I don't know, 10 types of drives or hundreds of drives or thousands of drives at a whack to convert, you know, to utilizing your facilities? Or is it more, you know, they're adopting, they're trying a handful of drives, see how it works. And then once they come up with, you know, a better idea what the performance and economics are, they bring in more.
Yes, actually now we are already at the stage, like we are already in the deep engagement with the two hyperscalers. They're already in the phase that on the way to of the large scale deployment of our product in their data center. So they already are fully convinced about the value and fully convinced about the trend, the future. And I'm sure that all the major hyperscalers in the world, they are looking at exactly the same direction. And for example, this NVMe standardization effort was driven by AWS. So AWS clearly see the need of pushing down certain computation from CPU to their storage and to their storage and I/O paths.
I mean, the other challenge with something like this is it's hard for many companies to sole source a technology. Like Intel runs the problem. They have to have AMD out there to provide x86 processors and stuff like that. Are you guys seeing the requirement to have multiple sources for these sorts of products?
Certainly in the long run, there should be multiple players, and there will be we believe, especially enabled by this NVMe standard. Like once we have this NVMe standard is open, then everybody can come in to then the differentiation is really kind of the quality, like because we follow the exactly same standard. But right now, because those early adopters, they really see the value, like the big value from our product that they can save, especially like using transparent compression to achieve significant storage cost saving. So they see the value, and then they are willing to bring in the product and largely deployed in their data center, even though we are the only one on the market.
Right. As far as the encryption is concerned, the keys for that sort of stuff, is that outboard or is that on the drive, or how does that work?
Yes. Right now, for our hardware, actually our hardware provide the root of trust capability. So then we are able to store the key on board, and then that also depends upon like a future system integration and how the software stack will start to integrate with us. But at least we can achieve this self encrypting drive functionality. But we can achieve more than that.
They had to solve this problem before you guys. So yeah. Interesting. So you've got TLC today, you're looking at QLC. Is, you know, in the QLC environment, the challenges are, you know, the latencies go up considerably, the wear leveling goes down, you know, or the endurance rather goes down considerably. I mean, how do you feel that, you know, your computational drive will work in that space?
So actually we are very excited about the potential opportunity over there for QLC, just because of the problems you just mentioned for QLC. That is exactly how our computational storage drive can help and come in to help to solve. For example, like we already have a working PLC on the QLC based drive. Like we see that clearly our transparent compression can very, very noticeably close the performance gap between the TLC and the QLC.
Because you're writing less data at a whack because it's compressed, and you're reading less data off the drive because it's compressed, and So latency is for example, better, and, yes. and the wear leveling is or endurance can be better, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All of them. Yeah. And because like for QLC, really kind of once we use the QLC drive in the system, then more likely the bandwidth of the QLC memory chip will become the system bottleneck, not the PCIe bottleneck, not the PCIe bandwidth. So then once we use the transparent compression, then logically we amplify or we expand the QLC flash memory bandwidth. So then, yes. Yeah. So then once we coupled with the lower cost of QLC, actually we can we are confident that by combining this transparent compression with the QLC, that can on both sides, that can displace hard disk drive in many scenarios, and also can also complement with the TLC in many scenarios. So that will really make this QLC the real applications of QLC will be largely amplified through our transparent compression.
You're not the only vendor who's told us that QLC will kill off drives, but I'm still not convinced, but that's subject for another discussion.
Oh, no, certainly I'm not claiming that the QLC will kill the hard drive. I believe that hard drive has its own position, absolutely. But for certain kind of area, for certain kind of use cases, once we can improve the performance of QLC and at the same time transparently further reducing the cost of the QLC, then for some scenarios it may make more sense to use the QLC other than
right disk drives in those days. All right, well, this has been great, Matt. Any last questions for Tong before we close?
No, but Ray, you did a great job on this one.
Well, you know, I've been interested in the computer. Well, quite frankly. So this is back in, 1990s. We were doing these sorts of things with a storage controller that fit in a rack, and had, 180 gig drives and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was crazy. All right, Tong, anything you'd like to say to our listening audience before we close?
Sure. We believe that computational storage drive will really kind of revolutionize the whole storage and the computing industry. And at this scale flux, we sincerely look forward to working with the whole industry to really make this thing happen and to contribute to the future growth of the whole industry.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been great. Thank you very much, Tong, for being on our show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for offering me this opportunity.
That's it for now. Bye, Matt.
Hey, bye, Ray.
Bye, Tong.
Until next time. Next time, we will talk to another system storage technology person. Any questions you want us to ask, please let us know. And if you enjoy our podcast, tell your friends about it. Please review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify, as this will help get the word out.